This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Today I'll talk to the extravagantly eccentric novelist James Ellroy about imagining the lives of gangsters.
I lie in the dark and I brood. I think about deep, dark, tortured, historical shit.
But first...
I'm pregnant.
What? Honest blog?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Bleakers.
It's probably just a food baby. Did you have a big lunch?
That is the smart-talking heroine from the movie Juno. She's the creation of Diablo Cody. Cody was 29 when she won an Oscar last year for the screenplay, and her second feature film is out now. It's a horror movie about a high school sex bomb who seduces boys and then literally devours them.
This isn't really your house, is it?
No, baby. This is our house. Just for you and me. We can play mommy and daddy.
The movie's called Jennifer's Body, and it is also smart and funny and beautifully acted, especially, if I may say so, for a horror film. Diablo Cody, welcome to Studio 360.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So horror movies, I assume you're a huge fan.
Huge, and I have been my entire life. They were kind of like the cinematic forbidden fruit when I was growing up.
Really?
Because I wasn't really supposed to watch them. But, you know, there were always some, like, under-supervised kids down the street who had cable. And we would go over there and watch Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th and Fright Night, etc.
Did you have a favorite?
Yeah. My favorites to this day, which was PG at the time, is Poltergeist. Although, if it were released in its existing form now, it would definitely be a hard R.
Really? Because it's scary?
There's gore. I mean, there's, like, a man who rips off his face on camera. It's actually it's a surprisingly violent and scary film.
This movie, as one would expect in a movie written by you, is full of humor. And you notice that comedy and the horror thing are adjacent approaches. I mean, it's no wonder that one would combine them.
Yeah, I've always said it's kind of a similar experience to see like something that's uproariously funny or something that's very scary, because you're reacting in a physical way to what you're seeing on screen. And that's honestly, as a writer, as a filmmaker, that's very tempting, because it's fun to watch your audience sort of contort themselves in reaction to what you've made.
So after Juno, after winning an Oscar, why do you choose to do a genre picture, a horror movie, when you could, you know, do pretty much at least get into development anything you wanted?
This was the anything I wanted.
Really? This was your love picture?
It was. And also, honestly, I feel more at home in the world of genre filmmaking, you know, vis-a-vis sort of the awards bait that we think of. Although I don't think Juno is a typical kind of Oscar movie.
No.
But at the same time, you know, I felt, honestly, while I was very grateful for that experience, I felt kind of out of place in that sort of world of like highbrow filmmaking. And I felt and feel very comfortable talking about Jennifer's Body, because it's something that I can relate to and something that I would consume and enjoy.
At one point in the movie, Needy, who is the heroine, and she's this nice, smart, best friend girl, says, "Hell is a teenage girl." What does that mean to you?
I kind of thought that it spoke to the whole theme of the movie, which is that a person who is under the influence of hormones and jealousy and society is by nature combustible and scary and unpredictable. And I think anybody who's ever lived with a teenager knows this to be true. And Jennifer herself is in this special kind of hell where her self-worth completely revolves around her sexuality and who she is as a body or a package. And so that was how we began the movie.
Megan Fox is the person who plays Jennifer, this demon-possessed popular babe, and she plays opposite Needy, her cherubic sort of best friend, played by Amanda Seyfried. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
You're a jerk. Wow, nice insult, Hannah Montana. You got any more harsh digs?
You know what? You were never a good friend. Even when we were little, you used to steal my toys and pour lemonade on my bed.
And now I'm eating your boyfriend. See? At least I'm consistent.
So, why Chip? Is it just to tick me off? Or is it because you're just really insecure?
I am not insecure, Needy. God, that's a joke. How could I ever be insecure? I was the snowflake queen.
Yeah. 2 years ago when you were socially relevant.
I am still socially relevant.
And when you didn't need laxatives to stay skinny.
The germ of the plot for Jennifer's Body actually had nothing to do with girl versus boy. It was about the two girls and the relationship between them and the fact that, you know, they had this friendship that went all the way back to childhood but had now turned toxic.
Which makes me see this as on a sort of family tree with Heathers. Is there a Heathers influence here?
Heathers didn't just influence this movie. It influences, like, my entire life and, like, my entire career path and everything that I do. It's, like, gospel.
It's just Heather. Why can't we talk to different kinds of people?
Do I look like Mother Teresa? If I did, I probably wouldn't mind talking to the Geek Squad.
That movie was sort of life-changing coming of age in the 80s to see something that was that, first of all, risky and secondly, smart. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
And like this, both realistic teen comedy stuff, but fantastic.
Yeah, it definitely took place in like a heightened reality. And at the same time, you could relate to the characters. And that's something that appeals to me for sure.
You are very good at writing in the voice of teenagers. And as you say, there are some Juno-esque lines in Jennifer's Body. I think of, for instance, the moment at which Jennifer tells Needy to get over the fact that this kid has been killed by saying moveon.org.
That's actually something I say.
I was going to say, is that something you say?
Yeah, yeah, I had not actually sort of invented that as like a stylized comment for Jennifer to make. I've been saying moveon.org for like a couple of years now.
How useful for you that you are the source of your own material.
I am my own obnoxious self. I am my own obnoxious muse.
Do you figure as you age, you're now over 30, you'll lose the knack for or
yes.
interest in writing these voices?
Knack for, definitely. Interest in, possibly. I suddenly, especially in the last year or so, have developed this obsession with writing adults. I am one, although I sense that the adult characters that I invent are always going to have some kind of strange connection to their past.
You also wrote the Showtime series United States of Tara about a suburban mother who has a dissociative identity disorder, who has three different alters, as she calls them.
More than three now.
Yeah? Well, there you go.
We're shooting the second season right now.
Really? And yeah. you multiply them?
No, it wasn't like, oh, well, we've painted ourselves into a corner. We need more alters. It was more, there's this entire rich backstory for Tara's character that unfolds over time. And her alters are all, you know, different components of her expressing what has happened to her in her life.
Let's listen to the amazing Toni Collette as a biker dude, a man named Buck, talking to her husband, or rather, I guess, Tara's husband.
What are you doing here, Buck?
I think your old lady got a little gun shy.
Why is that? Never had problems in the bedroom before.
Well, Tara thinks she want to get busy with the alters. T and Alice, I mean, not me. I know you ain't no homo. Anyway, she thinks she'd been banging her while she wasn't her, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. It's tough. Because I just want Tara.
Oh, hell, it ain't all that bad. If I were you, I'd take fair advantage of the situation.
Oh, really?
Is it tricky balancing the comedy knob with the heartbreak knob?
You have no idea. We always joke we've made, like, the first tromcom, a traumatic comedy. And it's so strange writing a half-hour show about a, you know, a mental disorder, especially since it's a realistic portrayal. We've, like, researched it so much, and we have a consultant who has DID.
Well, and it seems this is a totally over-the-top theatrical conceit.
It feels that way in definitely the first few episodes. In the beginning, I think there was this big question of, are people who tune in going to understand what's going on? She's going to have to change her clothes. She's going to have to do a really exaggerated voice, or they're not going to understand that this is a different personality. This season, we've been able to make it so naturalistic. Honestly, it's improved the show 1,000-fold.
That must be a relief.
Oh, my God. Doing a second season of a show in general is a huge relief because the first season is painful.
Right.
It's on-the-job training. But Toni Collette is incredible every step of the way, which is why she's nominated for an Emmy right now. So we're very, very, very happy for her.
You started off as a blogger. Now you tweet. When you're actually writing, non-tweeting, what is your process? How often do you write when you're working on something?
I have writer's block right now. It's severe. And I haven't experienced this in a really long time. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
Meaning you have something to do and you can't
yes.
do it?
yeah, I'm like up against a wall. I have a project that's a couple months overdue and I can't finish it. And I keep telling everybody this like they're my therapist, but I keep thinking the more I talk about it, it's bound to lift. But it's not. I do have scheduling and discipline issues. And that's the one thing I never learned, because I think...
You never really had an office job where you learned how to lash yourself to a
computer? Oh, no, I did. Oh, I had those jobs for sure. I just failed at them. You know, I have a checkered past in terms of employment. So now I need to – I keep asking other writers, how do you do this? What is your – what's your schedule? What's your process? Because I – after all these years of rebelling against it, I realize I need to have it.
In this checkered past of jobs you had, was there a worst one?
Right before I had my book Candy Girl published, I was working at an insurance company in a suburb of Minneapolis. And I was a claims adjuster, and it was really not the kind of work one such as myself should be doing, because you have to be, you know, very patient and very disciplined, and I have none of those qualities. And so I would sit all day in my cubicle, and I would wait for my supervisor to turn her back, and I would start working on Juno.
But it wasn't as though you said, oh, sure, you had an accident. Sure, whatever you want.
No. No, I was actually not bad at the job, but at the time I had really gotten the bug in terms of writing, and at that point I thought, all right, I'm either going to do this or I'm going to die in this cubicle.
Diablo Cody, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jennifer's Body opens in theaters this weekend. Prepare yourself. James Ellroy is my next guest, and he is a serious piece of work.
Hold on, partner, hold on.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
Don't interrupt me.
Oh, really?
It's the first thing you learned with me. Do not interrupt me.
Really? What happens if
it's
I
It's rude.
Oh.
I'll cut you off.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't interrupt me.
Well, okay.
All right? Okay, now restate the question.
I haven't stated it yet. That's ahead in just a minute in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.